You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
The Vietnam War, it's over.
You're John Chespagon.
A new HBO original limited series.
Welcome to the world of spycraft. Strap in.
From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr.
What are you concealing?
Based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel by Viet Thanh Nguyen.
What if I told you that I was a communist spy?
How did you become this?
The Sympathizer, streaming April 14th on Max. Subscription required.
Hi, I'm Keegan.
And I'm Madigan.
And you're listening to
Your Angry Neighborhood Feminist. This is a podcast where we explore the world through our own personal feminist perspectives.
That it is.
Mm-hmm.
Madigan, have you ever been afraid that you would get canceled?
On this show? Yeah.
Yeah.
All the time.
Yeah, all the time. I think
constant
about it all
fear.
The time. I actually think about old episodes.
Yeah,
and
all
I'm
the
like,
time.
I've grown and changed so much that I'm like, oh, I'm sure I've said, we've put out so many episodes. We're over 400 episodes deep at this point. And
right.
I'm like, definitely I've said something that I wish I could take back.
Well, and we've been called in on some things throughout the years too. And we can't really go back and change what's been said in those episodes, even when we've gone back and, you know, said, hey, we learned this thing and let's talk about it. You know what I mean? We can never control a new listener's, you know, experience going through everything. But I also think about, you know, in 10, 20 years from now, things like that, when I want to go back and listen to myself, or if, you know, my future kid does, or any, you know, I'm just like, there's got to be something I'm saying that is going to make me look really, really bad one day.
Right. Well, we're all changing and growing, and the world is always changing and evolving and growing. And I think that that's part of what makes a conversation about something like cancer culture in quotes.
Did you say cancer culture?
Cancer culture. It is cancer season.
Oh, it is. Well, no, it ended today.
Oh, wait.
Doesn't it end on July 20th or is it July 21st?
It's the 21st.
Okay, it ends tomorrow.
Leo season is coming. By the time
it'll
this episode...
It'll end days ago your time.
Yeah.
We're in the past.
Yeah, we are in the past. But it's something that makes the conversation around cancel culture so interesting. And I actually had a bit of trouble putting my notes together this week because I feel like this subject is so broad and nuanced, and the conversation has been co-opted and weaponized by so many different groups at this point that I feel like not everyone is always having the same conversation when you're talking about cancel culture.
I think in a lot of ways that's kind of the topic. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's so many different types of quote unquote cancel culture. What does that mean? Is it healthy for us? Accountability culture.
Oh,
thank you.
Yeah,
accountability.
Like, consequence culture.
Any of those words. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You know, talking about all those different things, because I think like anything, you know, cancel culture in, I guess, like our modern, you know, past couple of years really kind of hit it off swinging with like the Me Too movement, I feel like, is mm-hmm. when it really started kind of becoming a popular phrase for people to be saying. There were some origins, of course, that are, you know, far before that time. But to me, my first experience with cancel culture, kind of looking back on our very first episode, was encouraging people to name their abuser or to call out, especially a person in power who has been harmful to you, you know, to not be afraid to expose them for who they are. And I think that since that's happened and there was such a huge response, you know, when it comes to, you know, Harvey Weinstein's career and that whole story and how everything went down, that I almost feel like it kind of went crazy for a while. We were really digging into everybody's past. And there was a time where it really just felt like every morning, who's the next guy that's going to be canceled? You know what I mean? It really did become this like thing for a while.
Well,
where
And it became this thing where I feel like shades of gray got very muddy because it was like everyone was being canceled on the same level, regardless of what they'd done,
right.
Which I know was like a huge conversation that people had. And then you were like, well, how can we even have a conversation about when it's appropriate to cancel someone and to what degree, you know?
Right.
So it was just, it became this big thing. And then I think that the right really like clamped on to it as something that we should all be afraid of, or that their listeners should be afraid of, and they politicized it.
But then at the same time, they use it themselves so often and are so hypocritical and even use the phrase like canceled, or you know what I mean? Well, they'll use the same terms, but then chastise, you know, the progressive left for, you know, canceling all of their best buddies, you
right.
know?
Well, and they've started misusing the word as well, right? When they're saying things like the left is trying to cancel Mr. Potato Head, and it's like, Mr. Potato Head still exists, or the Potato Head franchise still exists. So we're not canceling anything. That's just a normal, natural progression of something moving along with the times, right?
Right.
So like Sesame Street, Mr. Potato Head.
Dr. Seuss, that was a big one.
Yeah.
And, you know, also, I was having a conversation with Max last night, actually, because we were watching a stand-up comedy special. I'm blanking on the guy's name because I'm horrible at remembering names all the time. But there were a lot of things said in this stand-up special that we were like, couldn't say that today. Couldn't say that today.
Oh, so it's an old one.
It was a really, this is like from the, it was from 89.
Oh, okay. Oh,
and
yeah.
And it was a white male comic.
Okay.
So,
yeah.
Who was very vulgar. You know what I mean? So, like, you got, it was a lot of anti-gay F word. It was a lot of, there was some, it was just a lot of, like, homophobic stuff, especially, that was going on. And so we were talking about it, and I'm like, it's interesting because, like, the guy's dead. He's long dead. This happened in 1989. Do I cringe every time I hear him say something like that? Yes. Am I going to go online and start a vendetta against a dead guy? No. You know what I mean?
It's but that's an interesting conversation as well to have, because I know that there were a lot of people who were like, I can't believe the left is trying to cancel John Wayne. Like, he was born at this time. And yeah, of course he was racist and he said all these racist things.
Yeah.
And on the one hand, yeah, we can't cancel John Wayne. John Wayne is dead, right? And I don't actually think that his views are all that surprising.
No.
You know, look at him. It's not that surprising. However, do I think it's worth talking about, like, hey, some of your heroes were actual bad people. Like, they were really bad people, actually.
Or they had these flaws.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, do I hate more than anything that Judy Garland did blackface?
Yeah.
I hate that more than anything. And I have to live with that. And I'm going to hold her accountable to that in my head and in my heart. You know what I mean? There's, like, there's things that the people that we love, that we aspire to be like, they're all human beings. And that's something that President Obama talked about, you know, when cancel culture started kind of becoming a thing shortly after his presidency ended, and just kind of mentioning, like, you know, everybody is human, everybody has flaws. But I think that that's also overlooking what cancel culture was initially supposed to be. I don't think it was supposed to be about nitpicking every single person's, like, flaws and missteps and lack of, you know, education and growth and things like that on certain topics. I think it should be about accountability. But I think that the fact that cancel was involved in this phrase, that it made it so much more toxic than I think it was initially intended to be.
Yeah, but I also feel like that was, I feel like they made it toxic, right? Because, like, the word cancel came out of the black community. Like, when you say cancel in reference to a person, like, I'm going to cancel that person.
It came out of what?
It came out of the black community.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. So I feel like that was something that was very much part of black culture.
Right.
Kind of on the underground for a while.
And it was a thing. I remember reading a lot for the research in this episode that black Twitter had kind of co-opted it for a while, too, before it became big in in the rest of the world, which what do, I mean, honestly, is everything.
Yeah,
it's like,
yeah,
it's cool. And then one white person sees it and like co-opts it. Yeah. Now everybody is see, like, also jumping woke. On the bandwagon.
Woke yeah, exactly. Is the same. But it started in 1991. There was a film called New Jack City that used the term first. And then it was used in 2014 on an episode of Love and Hip Hop New York. And that just happened to coincide with the Black Lives Matter movement.
Right. Well, can I say what the quote was in the movie? Because yes, it's misogynistic yeah. as fuck. Wesley Snipes, who's the actor, says, "Cancel this bitch. I'll buy another one." So like,
yeah, it's not good.
Negative connotation. I guess what I was saying earlier was more in my line of thinking of like the Me Too movement. And in times like that, where I feel like the way we were trying to kind of like co-opt that phrase was supposed to be more about accountability. And it became about well, more
it was,
than that.
It was always about accountability. Like right. even with the Black community, it was always about accountability. So Anne Charity Hudley, who's the chair of linguistics of African America at the University of California, Santa Barbara, said in 2019, quote, "When you see people canceling Kanye, canceling other people, it's a collective way of saying we elevated your social status, your economic prowess, and we're not going to pay attention to you in the way that we once did. I may have no power, but the power I have is to ignore you." So when we talk about canceling a figure like that, when we talk about canceling Kanye or Chris Brown or Woody Allen or whatever,
yep.
it is saying, I know you are more powerful than me, and it is an effort to take the power back, right? So
yeah.
it is not just about accountability. I mean, it is. It's saying like, your actions have consequences and you should be accountable to that. But it's also a way of for disenfranchised people to take their power back.
Yeah, exactly. Right? I think I read that same article because I had the
same quote. It's a great article, Vox.
I also added a little bit of an earlier quote where the same person says, "You don't even have the power to change all of public sentiment, but as an individual, you can still have power beyond measure." And I think that says a lot, especially when it comes to talking about power dynamics mm-hmm. and feeling strong enough and brave enough to be able to go up against that, even if you're just one person, and being able to have a whole group behind you that will support you in that.
Yeah.
And that's really what I see it as it should have been, you know?
Yeah. I mean, and I do think that that is what happened with the Me Too movement. I feel like
correct,
that is
yeah.
when we started seeing the common phrase, or I guess seeing people outside of the Black community starting to use the word cancel, it was in relation to Me Too and Time's Up. And so, yes, it was largely white women, you know, who were able to cancel their abusers. But I don't think that there's anything wrong with that use of the word.
We were not at all trying
to cancel Louis C.K.
Did it work?
For good reason.
No.
You know?
And that's the other, that was a whole other argument from another article that I read where it's like, does canceling work?
Not really.
No, because there's, you know, we can think of things, you know, people like Bill Cosby, Harvey Weinstein. I was going to mention Jeffrey Epstein, but we don't know what happened with him. But, you know, there's all these people where it's like their careers are over. They're done. I feel like there's a handful of those
yes.
that we can look at. You know what I heard about in doing this research?
Hmm.
Who's going to be in a movie coming out soon for Disney?
Hmm.
Armie Hammer.
Oh, yeah. You know, I'm not surprised, especially with someone like Armie Hammer, that they just waited it out and they were because I've heard this argument so many times and I'm willing
to
have the conversation.
He wanted to cannibalize people.
But can you like they're just texts. We have no proof.
I can't. Apparently he was off in the Cayman Islands, like working real estate or something for a while and like dip the fuck out of the U.S. But like now he's like, "I'm back, bitches," and like here for a premiere. And I'm like, "No, go away."
Well, he already was in a movie. He was in Death on the Nile.
That's the movie I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was in I think that was.
Did it already come out?
I think it already came
out.
Okay,
then this article was a little bit old, but I was like, what the freaking fuck?
Yeah. I mean, they did take him out of most of the trailer.
They showed them in some of it. I was like, that's Armie Hammer. That's the cannibal.
No, it's weird and...
And he's sadistic. I mean, even if you take the cannibalism out of the picture, the things that he's discussing are violent and sadistic. You know what I mean? It's like, do you want to work with someone who does that shit?
Me,
like,
personally?
What the fuck? Well, no, you know.
But I mean, I certainly would not.
In general, Disney, why are you endorsing this person? Like,
well,
what's wrong with
you? I do think that, not trying to cape for Disney, but I do think that Death on the Nile, at least, they had shot it before, and then COVID happened, and so they had to delay the release.
There's a lot of movies that have been canceled because their actors turned out to be shitty. I did extra work for some reboot of the movie Valley Girl, and Jake mm-hmm. Paul was supposed to be in it.
Ooh.
And they dropped the whole project because he was like the main character.
He's awful.
Oh, I have a Jake Paul story. He was like trying to mess with me, and he was like, "You know who I am? Do you know who I am?" And I was like, "I knew who he was."
He would.
I was like, "No," and like his buddy was like filming him, and they were like, "Oh shit! Oh, she doesn't know who you are." And I was like, "Yeah, go die."
He's wow.
He's actual human trash. I'm not gonna lie. Like, he's actual human trash.
He is terrible. He is terrible. But as far as whether or not canceling works, I mean, you did name some examples in which it did have an effect. You know, Weinstein, R. Kelly, these are people for whom it has had an effect, right? Like, we as a collective stood up and said, absolutely not. You know, Spotify, take his music off. Like, right. We don't want this person around anymore. We have decided, the people have spoken about this. And in those cases, it did work. But overwhelmingly, it doesn't, or it works in terms of they might lose some jobs. They might not be as public, but they're not going to lose the vast majority of their income.
Well, and also it kind of depends on who you're talking to, because I was reading that J.K. Rowling, after she came out with her like very transphobic manifesto,
got a lot of support.
Her sales boosted in mm-hmm. Britain after that.
Yeah.
You know, it, like, you never know what kind of backing these different celebrities have. You know what I mean? I think of another one as being like Kevin Hart was one that really pissed me off, and his such a lack of apology for all of his homophobic tweets that came out, and how he just so went on the defensive. That's just another one for me where I'm just like, I wish that more accountability had been made.
The thing is, because I think that this is where, and see, I'm even nervous having a conversation about cancel culture, because I think that everyone has very strong feelings about, you know, like, absolutely, you should always cancel these people, throw them away and never speak about it again.
For me, I'm not necessarily saying cancel Kevin Hart, but can I get more accountability than I was given?
For me, it's all about how the person responds, right? Where there's a reason why there are certain people who I will never I will never consume what they put out there. So
yeah.
Chris Brown is one of them.
Yep.
Roman Polanski is one of them.
Yep.
Woody Allen is one of them.
Ryan Adams, both Max and I have him like blocked on our Spotify, whatever. There's a couple different musicians. But
these three for me are three who I feel like have not successfully been canceled. They are still out there with very successful careers, making money all the time. And for me, the reason why, where I draw the line with them, you know, where I draw it, is because they have not been held accountable and they have not apologized or admitted any wrongdoing whatsoever. And they've continued to go on and have these careers and make all this money from it. And so I refuse to contribute to that. I
know
that, like, I was over at a friend's house and they wanted to watch Match Point. And I was like, well, if you're going to watch it, then that's fine. Like,
what is that?
It's a Woody Allen movie.
Oh.
And I was like, I'm going to go, you know, do something else. Like,
yeah.
Because I just, for myself, somebody who has not apologized, acknowledged what they've done, or been held to account in any way, I cannot.
Yeah. Well, it's just going to enrage you the whole time. And I think that this is also something that we talk about inadvertently whenever we do a Problematic Faves episode as well, because, like, a lot of times, you know, some of these people have different lines for themselves about, like, different things that they can handle and tolerate, like, kind of like talking about watching the stand-up comedian and they were making like really homophobic jokes, you know, like different people have different like tolerances for different things. And I also think that's important as well. And kind of like what you mentioned earlier that I think we should talk more on is the different levels of canceling and the reasons for canceling people, because I think that there is a difference between Kevin Hart's tweets and what Harvey Weinstein did.
Right, absolutely. And I think also allowing space for people to learn and grow and apologize and come back, right? Like, because I'm all about that. Like, I'm all about people being able to be rehabilitated. And I love a good redemption arc. I love a good redemption story if it's real, if it's genuine, because
if it isn't performative for the media to make more money and make your money back.
I don't think any one of us would want to be held to that standard of like, everything you do goes on your permanent record forever, and you can never work your way out of it. You can never do anything to be good enough to redeem yourself, right?
That's like, where we do have to have empathy.
Yeah, like I don't think that's fair to say that, because people grow and change. I've grown and changed and evolved and will continue to for the rest of my life. Like,
right.
So I don't want to be held to that standard. However, I need to see genuine growth. I need to see that you've understood what you've done and why it was wrong. And I need to know that your apology is not only genuine, but you are making strides to make amends. Like,
yeah. And I think that sometimes time comes with that too, with depending on what you've done. If you can show growth over time and sometimes like not be, I think the other issue that I have so much of the time is like celebrities grabbing at the spotlight in order to make up for their mistakes, where it's almost like it's too much. It's like, I'm seeing too much of you. You know what I mean? It's like, you need to give me more time. You need to give yourself more time, some growth space, things like that. Come back to me later, that kind of thing. You know what I mean? And I can't think of any off the top of my head, but I do know that there's been many, you know, musicians and actors out there who have recognized that, you know, maybe they're going down a wrong path. They aren't being the person that they want to be in their lives. They take a step back, you know, grow a little bit. When they feel ready, they can come back to their careers, things like that. I think that everyone should be introspective.
I think Aziz Ansari did that.
Yes.
You know, I think he's an example of that. I think he's also an example. And again, I know that everybody's going to have different opinions on this. I think he's also an example of someone for whom, for me, it felt like, are we going to put him on the same level as a Weinstein?
That was a big topic of conversation, like, when, because I think that was kind of the first time that everybody was like, whoa, whoa, wait, should we be treating him the same as this?
Right. And
because,
that's not to say that he shouldn't be held accountable for shitty behavior.
For
because
a refresher, you know, he went on a date with a woman, or maybe there was multiple women. I can't remember.
It was one woman.
There was one woman who like told a story about how, you know, she had come home with him from a date and he was just kind of relentlessly pursuing her.
Pressuring her
to have sex and kind of like, come on.
Which is off.
It's super shitty.
We've been in that position. It is awful.
But I've also known like guy friends of mine who have like said that stuff when they were younger and now are like, holy shit. Or maybe didn't mean to do it, but like said something that was pressure. You know what I mean? Like, I think that especially in like the media that we consumed, that especially young men consumed when we were growing up,
certainly
showed a very different picture of like what consent and sex
and what
looked
was
like.
Acceptable. Absolutely.
Exactly. And that's not an excuse, because like, I know many men who never would have acted that way. But I also think that there's sometimes like a blurred expectation where they're like, what, I thought this was okay.
Yeah. You know, I do think sending Aziz Ansari to the corner and saying, go over there and think about what you did.
Exactly.
Was fine. Like, yes. I could, because I do feel like he made a woman feel very unsafe and very uncomfortable
and
in a situation.
He needs to acknowledge that.
Whether or not he meant to. Like, that's shitty. And like, shouldn't have happened. He did issue an apology, right? Like, but I have no problem saying like, no, all men take note. That shit that he did is not cool. And I'm okay that we're having a conversation about how this is not cool and should never go down, because it makes me as a woman on a date feel very uncomfortable and unsafe.
It started a conversation as well that I think that a lot of women haven't had with, you know, even their partners or the people,
dates,
their friends, their
dates,
guy friends, things like that, where it's like, yeah, this happens a lot and it really fucking sucks.
And it's not
Don't
okay.
Do that. Yeah.
But at the same time, I think there was a lot of conversation where people were like, well, throw him completely away. He's just as bad as Harvey Weinstein. And it's like, I don't think he's as bad as Harvey Weinstein. I don't even think he's as bad as your Louis C.K.'s, right?
Yes,
like,
exactly.
I don't think.
Definitely not. Oh my God.
So there's degrees to which we need to be viewing this under. And I think the degree to which, you know, the offense, how bad the offense is, it should be comparable with the level of cancellation and the ability for that person to return or not, you know, because there's absolutely under no circumstances that I can think of, even if he was super, super sorry, that Harvey Weinstein should ever return.
No. Or Bill Cosby or Kevin Spacey.
Exactly.
Any of those. There are certain people where we have to hold them to a certain level of regard where we're like, no, actually, fuck off. You're canceled. But I think that for a lot of other people, it's about being like, hey, the person you love so much, they did something pretty shitty. Let's talk about that. Let's look at that.
Because
let's
also not
just idolize these celebrities as being these perfect beings that are exactly what we expect them to be all the time. And it really sucks to find out that someone that you you know, really look up to has done things that you don't agree with. That really, really sucks. But I think that it is important to take them off of that pedestal a little bit too, instead of just having a very, you know, parasocial relationship with them. You're able to see their flaws and acknowledge the fact that they're just like the people in your life as well.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Like, that was such a celebrities. They're just like you moment for me.
They're just like.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
Us.
Yeah.
No, but seriously, and I think that it can be scary. It can trickle down. And there's a lot of people who have talked about the cancel culture phenomena, and people who are not just right wing, but also progressive people have had conversations about whether or not we think that it is something that's healthy for people to be growing up in, because a lot of young people, there were studies done with a lot of young people who hold a lot of anxiety now moving through the world, people who are in college and younger, about everything that they do, because they're very afraid that they're going to do or say the wrong thing. Right?
I get that. I also just kind of feel like that's more of a conversation about not being shitty to people. I don't know. Because like we were just talking about the different levels of standards for things. I think that we should have a certain level of holy shit, everything I say and do on the internet is there forever and yes, everyone can see it. I think that there's a level of anxiety that needs to be there.
Yeah.
But I also think that, like, I don't know. I understand where that's not a positive thing for people to be so scared of what they're going to say and do on the internet all the time. But I also think that, like, that's a really important thing to practice, is like being very like conscious, aware of everything yeah, you're putting online.
Yeah, I agree. I definitely think that better to err on that side than we were all just wild westing it, you know, back in the day.
Where oh my
we were
God, just there was no protections at
anything
all
on the internet, you know, which is why so many people in our generation and older have been canceled or on the verge of being canceled, because you can
we
go
find
back
their MySpace pages mm-hmm or some shit, yeah, and we didn't even think about
we weren't
things
thinking
back then
about it, right?
And I mean, and there are even things in my life of like times that I've bullied people and like,
oh, absolutely, yeah,
you know, where I just feel so shitty, where I would be like, if someone found out about that horrible thing I said and did when I was 11 years old, I would be mortified. Right. You know what
but
I mean?
I think I understand it in terms of like there being this fear with everyday people that didn't used to exist. It used to be something where it was like, oh man, if I ever get famous, I need to hire a company to go back through all my stuff and
like
and
clean it out.
It up,
yeah.
Right. Because all of us have said something dumb, and oftentimes for our generation, most of us have said something dumb on the internet. We have. But now it's not just that. Now it is also everyday people, right? And this phenomenon kind of started on the internet. I found this very interesting. I read an article. Which article was it? Because I read a couple of Vox articles, which were very good.
Right.
But this was a New York Times article, and it was talking about kind of the history of cancel culture. And in the early 2000s, there was a phenomenon that swept China, and it was called Renru Susao, something like that, which translated as literally as human flesh search, which is not a great, it doesn't translate great in English.
Very Squid Game.
But the wording was meant to suggest a human powered equivalent of a computer search engine. So basically what this was a request would go out on a website or whatever, and it would be web sleuths, web citizens, who would act as at home detectives in order to find out information about objects or people. So this was a time, it was the early 2000s, search engines were new. It wasn't just like Google.
But were they like searching like random people? I'm confused. Like, what was the point?
So I don't know exactly. I think it was kind of like, hey, it could be objects or people. So it's like, hey, what is this thing? And then you had the wealth of knowledge of other people on the internet to be like, that's what that is, right? Like, I can educate you, I think. But then it evolved into people would be sharing pictures of politicians who, like, there's this politician who's wearing a, you know, $50,000 wristwatch whenever the people in his province are starving. And so then they would find out all the information about this politician, and they are basically excise him. They would get him out of the community. They would dox him, right? Yeah. They would do all of that stuff. And they started doing that with other people on the internet as well. You know, not people who were seen to be like kind of anonymous. They would figure out who they were, dox them basically, and cancel them in society. And at the time, the people of the West believed that this was not something that could possibly happen here.
But this is the thing, like, I forgot to mention this earlier, when we talk about doxing somebody, we're also talking about like shunning people. Like, that's been around forever.
Yeah.
And it's happened in Western cultures too, you know?
But I think the fervor of the connectivity of the internet.
Exactly. That's what's made it different. Yeah.
So when the New York Times ran a feature on this phenomenon that was happening in China, one commenter wrote, "I am surprised by the intensity of the searches. And I think this is an Eastern trait. Most people in the West can't be bothered. We're too individualistic and well served by existing mechanisms." And then there was an editor of a China Law Review who made a similar argument in an essay, noting that the human flesh search was a, quote, grassroots effort and thus far more likely to arise in collectivist China as opposed to go it alone America. And of course, they were wrong.
Very, yeah.
You know, as soon as we all kind of like collectively got on the internet.
Well, we love to see one another fall, don't we? You know, we love to find the flaws in people and see them fall. And I feel like that's a very Western.
And we love to be. We love to collectively be angry. Like, nothing
mob
unites
mentality,
us.
Yeah.
Yeah, nothing unites us more than a common enemy, right? Like, it's like, if we can find somebody. And then also, there is that element of wanting to have a little bit of power. And, like, we don't have any. Our system is designed for us not
especially
to have any.
Especially against these big politicians and people that are making decisions for our lives. You know, I think it makes total sense. Like, what other power do we have to say or do anything? And I know what that feels like, to be so angry that you almost just want everyone to know about it and feel validated in it too. Like, I understand that want of wanting to just like completely go out and dox this person for any sort of reason. You know what I mean?
Or you just want justice. I mean, whether it be right or not,
like, I understand that feeling.
You know? I mean, I know that we're both pretty justice oriented people. Like, I feel like I'm very justice oriented. It's why I get so mad that like Woody Allen gets to just continue to make movies. Right.
And why does Netflix keep shoving Dave Chappelle down my throat?
Right.
I'm sick
of
it.
It's one of those things where I'm just like, you shouldn't have been able to escape the wheels of justice the way you have and still be this like celebrated person. So it's not a vendetta against, you as a human being, and I just want to see you fall. I want to see justice done in this situation. And then there is also this element of these are considered to be like the elite, right? Like Woody Allen has like five houses and makes millions and millions of dollars every year. And he gets to be a shitty person who just gets to live his life doing that, not on my watch,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, exactly.
So we start feeling that way about it. But I think because there is this power of the collective behind it, that is why right-wing politicians have gotten so upset about this.
Right. Well, and I feel like the other thing that right-wing politicians can cling to with cancel culture so strongly is this idea of free speech. They always talk about how canceling is like going against free speech. And it always just really grinds my gears when they say that, because free speech does not mean that you get to say hurtful, hateful, violent, violence-inducing things to people. You know what I mean? I think
that, or you can, but there's,
but you have to understand the consequences, of course. Right, exactly. So I just really, I hate that argument, because I don't think that when we are talking about free speech, we meant like, say anything you want, no matter if it hurts somebody, like, fuck it, whatever. Yet for some reason, that is what so many conservatives have clung to these days, where they'll say something really hateful or really awful and just be like, what? Like, free country, free speech. I can say what I want. I mean, what are you going to do, cancel me? You know what I mean? Like, it's just, it kind of all runs in. Right, but it all kind of runs in together. And then these politicians are like, to be canceling someone over their freedom of speech.
Right. Well, that's the issue, right? It's because when freedom of speech is talked about, freedom of speech just means that you are free from prosecution.
Right.
If you say something to someone, you are free from prosecution, unless what you are saying is incitement of hate speech, right?
Right.
Like, outside of that, you are free of prosecution. You are not free from social consequences of the things that you say. And as a society, if we are moving in a certain direction, the consequences are going to change. Like, there was a time when you could have a comedy special and say, you know, derogatory slurs against gay people, and people kind of just allowed that to happen. You can't really do that so much anymore because our society changed. That's what happened. So you have societal consequences now for doing things like
that.
And
that goes into your job as well, because everybody is moving in the same way. So I think it's like, well, why would you fire someone over something like that? Well, it's like, well, because they're living in our society.
Right. And this is how we
function. This is another form of punishment. And because if you're behaving that way, your employer probably doesn't want you to be around.
And,
you know?
And you're making other employees who should feel safe feel unsafe. Like, there are all kinds of things that go into it. But the right has really decided to portray this. And they have in a big, big way, you know. Personalities like Tucker Carlson have equated cancel culture or the woke mob culture to things like genocide.
Right.
You know, and they've really kind of hammered this home to the point where polling during the 2020 election showed that people on the right were far more aware of cancel culture than people on the left,
exactly.
Even though it was people on the left who were perpetuating, quote unquote, cancel culture more often.
Exactly.
And they often depict people on the receiving end of cancel culture as innocent victims of this, you know, mob mentality. Like, they didn't do anything. And can you believe they're being attacked for no reason? Which, as we just said, just because you are free from criminal prosecution doesn't mean you're free from me calling you an asshole.
Yeah.
Right?
That's my freedom of speech, calling you an asshole.
Right.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And so I think it's kind of important to have a conversation about why. Why are they attacking this so hard? Because they truly are going after this in a real, real way. They're saying that they're erasing history, encouraging lawlessness.
Hashtag uncancel America.
Uh-huh, exactly. So there was a journalist, Shamira Ibrahim, made the point that the panic stems from the collective organizational power that online spaces provide to marginalized communities. Social media is one of the few spaces that exists for collective feedback, and where organizing movements that threaten conservative social standing have begun, thus compelling them to invert it into a philosophical argument that doesn't affect just them, but potentially has destructive effects on censorship for even the working class individual. So they are going after this issue so much because they see that it does have the actual potential for change. Now, as we've already said, it's not always super effective, but they see that it could be. Because anytime all of us are together saying like, hey, that's actually kind of fucked up and it's impeding our progress, right, and we should do something about that.
If enough of us feel that way, that's when it is effective.
Right. And so they want to pump the brakes on that as quickly and as hard as possible. Yeah. Right. Like, so they're going to hammer it home in every sense of the word. They're going to make it seem like anybody who's trying to cancel anybody is like evil and they're censoring you and how dare they, you know?
Which is so unbelievably hypocritical, because there's a few examples of the opposite happening that I wanted to bring up that are really big stories in their own right. So remember Rebecca Black?
Yes.
This isn't really a political one, like the conservatives were after her, but no, this is just a really big, like, she was canceled hardcore. Yes. Like, this girl did, she was 13 and did like a cute little music video with her friends. Was it annoying as hell? Yes. Yes. Was it cringy?
Yes. Yes.
Was she 13 years old and having fun with her friends? Like, let her do what she wants. This poor girl is being sent death threats. She and her friends were getting food thrown at them. Like, it's awful.
Oh, and, yeah. And Monica Lewinsky.
That was another one that I wanted to mention.
Did you watch the John Oliver one on public shaming? Because he had, yes, a whole conversation about this that I thought was fascinating.
I can't remember, yeah, all of it because my memory sucks. But yeah, yes, I do remember him talking about it. But Monica is a really important one because she was only 24 years old, mm-hmm, when she had an affair with the president of the United States, Bill Clinton. And the media put all the blame on her instead of blaming the president, who was in the position of power.
Yeah, and considerably older than her.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And Monica Lewinsky has actually been a very big voice in the cancel culture movement. She's written a book that's a lot about cancel culture, and there were a lot of different articles written where she's discussing this topic. So there was an article that she did with Rolling Stone, and I pulled a quote from that, and she says, "We need to actually divide cancel culture up into what the pieces are. What are we talking about? Are we talking about a Me Too scenario where someone has been a sexual predator, abused their power? Are we talking about a scenario where it's a company, or are we talking about something that's a racial issue? Is it a misstep from somebody who actually really does anything like that? Is it something somebody said from a long time ago and they've evolved as a person?"
Mm-hmm.
And I think that those are just necessary questions to ask in order to answer whether or not we should be treating this person so harshly.
Mm-hmm.
Is it because of our own prejudice or because of how this story makes us feel, especially when it comes to Monica Lewinsky? We held our president and a white man at a higher esteem than this young intern because she meant less. She was, yes, less powerful. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And her career didn't matter as much. You
right.
know?
And it was funny to, yeah, us. And I think that that's part of it too. And I hope that we are at least... our cancel culture is evolving, I hope, in that I really feel like with Monica Lewinsky and with who was that? Who, there were all the jokes because she cut off her husband's penis.
Lorena Bobbitt.
Yeah. You know, I feel like a lot of the things that happened at that time period were just like, we are making jokes because we think this is funny.
Yes.
Right. And we're not taking into account the detrimental effect that this is going to have, the real life, real, yeah, world consequences, oh, on Monica Lewinsky's life. Yeah. You know,
if you wouldn't be too triggered, I highly recommend Lorena, yeah, the documentary, mm-hmm, on Prime Video. It's so good. It's such an important story. But another one that I wanted to mention because it was pretty recent was Kathy Griffin, after she came, yeah, out with like, mm-hmm, the beheaded Donald Trump picture. You know, the right went bonkers over that. I mean, she was put on no fly list. Like, it was really, really terrible. She was very, very scared. And that's just like the kind of comedian she was. And there's two more that I really want to mention because they were really big stories back in, I believe, 2003. I can't find it in my notes right now, but the Chicks were canceled, yes, after, yeah, speaking out against the Iraq war and, you know, President Bush being from Texas. You know, Natalie Maines was threatened with death threats. The band almost broke up in their infancy because of the pressure that was put on them for speaking out about how they felt. And in line with that, Colin Kaepernick, you know, was completely, right, canceled by the NFL, mm-hmm, after kneeling for the national anthem and lost his entire career.
Well, yeah, I mean, and they've tried to effectively cancel, using legislation, the teaching of any kind of like race related talk, the 1619 project in schools, things like that. They've tried to actually put legislation in place, not just saying like, I don't like this, right?
Right.
Where, because I do...
A legislative canceling.
Right. I do feel strongly that you should, whatever your beliefs are, even if I think that they're wrong, you're entitled to support or not support whatever you want, whatever right. you feel you aligns with your worldview and your beliefs.
And I have to remember that I feel that way because I want you to treat me with that same respect.
Exactly.
I have to say, you know, it's not always easy.
Absolutely. You know, I don't always agree with what you do or don't like or what you do or don't support, but I do believe in your right to not support something. If you don't like Colin Kaepernick and you want to burn all of your Nikes and never go to another 49ers game ever again,
so be it.
So be it. That is your right. But what you don't get to do is start writing legislation because you don't like that somebody is doing something. You don't get to send them death threats, right? Like, there are things that, there are lines that you don't get to cross. I think Woody Allen is a piece of shit molester.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not going to send him a death threat.
And I also think that there's a level of protection on the internet with it being anonymous as well, or not seeing someone face to face. You're not saying that to this person's face or talking about it in a room with where the person is there. You are in the safety of your own home on your phone or on your computer and discussing these things most of the time, where I think really, you know, it makes people braver to say things that they maybe wouldn't say.
Yeah, it's interesting to me because you can voice your opinion like I have many times on this podcast about people that I don't like and don't want to support. You can voice your opinion about that, and you can choose not to consume their media. So if you are mad at Disney because they put people of the same sex kissing in a TV show or something, right?
Or if you're like, going to cancel Disney because they put Armie Hammer in a movie even after all the cannibal shit.
Whatever, like, whichever way you're going.
Yeah.
If you don't want to consume that media, that is your right. Nobody is going to strong arm you into going to the next Disney movie or going to Disneyland. Nobody is going to make you do that.
Yeah.
You don't have to give them your money. I do feel like, you know, most of us, regardless of which side of the political spectrum we are on, the wealth gap in this country is massive. Most of us fall below, we are at middle class or under at this point. So where we spend our money, it is a powerful statement about what we believe in. We can use our dollars to speak politically. And I think that everyone has the right to do that if they want to.
Right.
Right? So in that way, I'm just like, it's everyone has the right to cancel anyone based on their own personal, like, I'm canceling.
Yeah, for their own lives, but you can't pressure other people
exactly
to do the same. I think that you have every right to express it. And if a lot of other people agree with you, a la, you know, Harvey Weinstein, Kevin Spacey, all these other things, I do think that's important. You should still also be able to step forward and call people out.
Look at what you're canceling them for, okay?
Yeah.
Because I do think that there's a really big difference. And again, don't spend your money at Disney if you don't want to, for whatever reason you might have. But there's a big difference between being like, I'm going to cancel Disney. I want the whole company to go under because I don't like that two people that are the same gender kissed, and saying, hi, this was a predator who serially went out and raped women.
Yeah, like, very, you know, different.
I think that
very different.
Collectively, we should be able to say, like, this should not even be a partisan issue. Like, that's not cool.
That
right?
person,
like,
just sucks. Yeah exactly.
Yeah. I think I just wanted to close by saying, you know, I think that cancel culture comes from a place of accountability, and it comes from a place of marginalized communities wanting to have their voices heard. And that has oftentimes been communities of color, women, members of the LGBTQ community. I mean, those have been real strong advocates for certain people to be canceled for social reasons. And I think that those things are good. And I think that that's cancel culture at its best. I think for us to grow and evolve as a culture, we have to say publicly, this behavior is not acceptable. We won't accept it. And I think that also sends a message to the people in those communities that we stand with you, right? Like, we are here to protect you. We're protecting you. And I think that that stuff is really important. I do think on the other side of that, at its worst, cancel culture can be this thing that drives people further and further into their own little, like, hole, and they get more and more defensive. And if we feel like they can never come out of it and they can never change their mind and they're going to be stuck there no matter what they do, right? So I just think that it's important to think about cancel culture in terms of allowing space and grace for people to be able to change their mind and come out of it, if ever they show a desire to do that.
Yeah, definitely. All right. Well, that's all we have on that topic today. If there's anything that you want us to discuss in the future, you can go ahead and email us at neighborhoodfeminist@gmail.com, or you can direct message us on Instagram at Angry Neighborhood Feminist. We have a Facebook business and group page. You can rate and review us on the business page and chat with the other listeners on the group page. Last but not least, if you haven't done so already, go to your Apple Podcast app and leave us a 5-star review with a quick sentence about why you enjoy the show. It really does help us a whole lot. All right. That's all we have for you today. With all that being said, we encourage you
to rage on.
Bye.
Anna Sheridan, New York Times bestselling author of Supernatural Horror. Missing for nearly 6 months now.
That's not possible. Is the compass broken? Or did I turn to the sleep patterns?
Given the circumstances of her disappearance, someone with a more vivid imagination might decide she'd pierced the veil, so to speak.
Weak radio signal. 700 meters. Closing fast.
There's no place for ghost stories and close encounters in this investigation, or any other.
I need you to find me.
To save yourself. What else would it be?
The Sheridan Tapes, a serialized horror mystery podcast. Stream the complete series today on Realm and on all podcasting platforms.